15. I want to tell these people that violence isn't necessary, that they can avoid the pain and potential death by just letting us go and getting the hell off this mountain before time slips again and they find themselves, like us, caught in the flux. But I know it's not possible. I've seen enough killers to know these people won't think twice about taking our lives. We've seen their operation, and now I've attacked one of their own. I have no doubt Boone was planning to put bullets in our heads once he was done with us, so I don't feel horrible about what comes next. But I do regret it. Taking a security job kept a gun on my hip, but I never believed I'd have to use it. The business of taking lives, for survival or for Uncle Sam, weighs heavy on the soul. I'd hoped to spend my life wandering Synergy's wooded fence line, accompanied by the memory of my father, letting my demons fade into the morning fog. Alas. I spring from the ground as the oversized woman collapses in a writhing mass, clutching her ruined knee. She'll survive the blow if she stays down, but she'll have a limp to remember me by. A rifle cracks as I kick it to the side. The man holding the weapon snarls in frustration, but the sound is cut short when I chop his throat. The rifle comes free as the shooter crumples to the ground. I wield the weapon like a baseball bat, clutching the hot barrel and swinging hard at a woman charging with a rusted butcher knife. As the blade comes down, I connect with her clutched hand. She shouts in agony as her fingers break. The blade twinkles like a disco ball as it spins away, forcing several of the bootleggers to duck. In the brief respite, I glance at Minuteman, watching him work through a gaggle of men and women with the same speed, skill, and ruthless attention to subduing his enemy without killing them. He is an impressive fighter, and if I'm honest, a bit more in his prime than I am. His attacks are fluid, lacking any trace of hesitation. He's 10 steps ahead of the bootleggers who are half drunk on their own product, and likely haven't been in a fight with anyone who wasn't also inebriated. No matter how impressive a fighter is, there's not much he can do about a shotgun shell, though. When I spot a man with an early pump-action shotgun raising the weapon toward Minuteman's back, I abandon my fighting stance and dive over the woman with a broken hand. A quick roll and I'm back on my feet. The man doesn't see me coming until I've already got a hand on the forend. I pump the weapon in rapid succession like I'm working out with a shake weight, ejecting 4 shells and rendering it useless just as the man pulls the trigger with a click. "On your 6, Minuteman says. It's not a thank you, but there's no doubt now. We're in this together. For the moment, we're brothers in arms. I kick hard without looking and feel the soft impact of a man's gut. A loud "oof" is followed by the sound of a crumpling man desperate to suck in a breath. Like the other people we've incapacitated, he's out of the fight for now, but will live. When I turn to look at the man, I'm caught off guard by the sight of 2 women, barreling over him, empty hands outstretched, dirty fingers hooked to rake and claw. There's no avoiding or deflecting them. The pair collides with me and the 3 of us spill to the ground. They lay into me like beasts, screaming and scratching. But there's no skill behind the attack and even less thought. They're lost in rage, probably because I've injured someone important to them. Instead of kneeing me in the nuts or gouging at my eyes, they tear at my chest, doing a number to my shirt and scratching my skin, but little else. As a man with a ridiculously large mustache closes in with a hammer in his hand and murder in his eyes, I clutch the women's hair in my hands. With a yank, the pair comes apart, and with a shove, their heads collide. It's not enough to knock either unconscious, but it knocks the fight out of them. The mustache man swings hard with the hammer, letting out a bellow. I roll backward, narrowly avoiding the strike. Instead of hitting me, the hammer slaps into the muddy earth. The man gives it a yank, but the tool-turned weapon is stuck. He pulls hard with a grunt, giving me time to get to my feet and plot a counterattack. But it's not necessary. Minuteman soars through the air, driving his foot into the side of the man's head. The man topples like a felled tree, landing in a cushion of slush. I spin around, fists clenched, ready to continue the fight. But it's over. 12 men and women are on the ground in various states of consciousness and injury. But none are dead. Minuteman doesn't strike me as the merciful type, and his business on this land in any time is illegal. He's a killer. Of that there is no doubt. But he's also a professional. Though they were armed, it was clear none of these people were a significant threat, not like Chafin and his men, and not like Boone and his. I'm about to ask him why he went easy on our attackers, when the distant pop of a 9mm handgun reminds me that the bootlegger hit squad has gone after Cassie and Levi. When Minuteman turns toward the sound of gunfire, I say, "I could use your help." He turns away from the gunfire, looking uphill. I'm not sure if he's looking toward the carved flat summit where the Synergy facility was built, or if he's thinking about his own people. Either way, it's clear his attention is someplace else. "I could ask the same of you." I back away, stepping downhill, resisting the urge to sprint. I'm not comfortable letting this man out of my sight, but subduing him in time to help my friends isn't possible. Hell, I might not even be able to take him. And if I could, what am I going to do? Run down the mountain with him slung over my shoulders? I decide to put a pin in our confrontation. "Whatever you are planning, it's too late to finish," he says, crouching down to recover the pump shotgun and its ejected shells. "We're clearly too late." As he sets about reloading the weapon, I ask, "You were trying to prevent this? This is just one of a dozen theoretical outcomes for what they were doing." When I say nothing, he says, "You really have no idea, do you, what they were doing, the forces they were playing with?" My blank stare is answer enough. He shakes his head, not quite in disgust. It's more like disappointment. "You're not exactly the bad guy I was told you'd be," he says, and then he grins. "Would have made killing you easier." "I'm the bad guy?" My face must betray my twisted up emotions, because Minuteman chuckles at me, shaking his head. He pumps the shotgun, chambering the first of four shells. When the mustached man reaches up for the weapon, Minuteman slugs him back down to the ground. I stop in my tracks as his last words filter past my confusion. "Would have made killing you easier." Instead of putting a handful of metal pellets in my chest, Minuteman catches me off guard by throwing the loaded weapon to me. I catch it by the barrel as the sound of more gunfire rolls up the mountainside. The sharp crack of a rifle tears across the landscape, no longer being answered by the 9mm report. "Better get moving, soldier," he says. When I turn around and sprint downhill, I hear his voice chasing me. "Good luck." I race through the camp, leaping from the clearing into the woods, and I charge downhill without returning the sentiment. What Minuteman and his people had planned to do at Synergy is a mystery. But a man like him could be capable of anything from corporate espionage to wholesale destruction. Based on the state of my truck before I was swept into the past, I'm thinking it was the latter. My thoughts focus on the truck. Why did he wait to detonate the bomb? Minuteman isn't the kind of person that makes mistakes like that. Despite his parting joke, killing me had never been the plan. It's conceivable he hadn't intended to kill anyone, which begs the question, what was he planning? And why? Having to ask that question at all irks me. Now, anyway. Before today, I was happy to live a simple life, collect a paycheck, and do my job. But my ignorance to Synergy's work has put me and those I've brought to the company at risk. And that seriously pisses me off. The cold air burns my lungs as I sprint. My body groans from the effort, not so much from the run. Gravity helps me along, but from the cold. I forgot to reclaim my coat and my backside is still wet from sitting in half-frozen mud. If I don't warm up soon, I might have to add frostbite to my growing list of problems and physical ailments. The small hole in my arm and the wound on my head are bad enough. Missing a few fingers might make firing a weapon or even throwing an effective punch a challenge. The sound of gunfire stops. I try not to consider the mind-numbing scenario in which I'm too late and my friends have been gunned down. But it's impossible not to think about, and if that's the case, Boone and his men will not receive the same merciful treatment as the men and women sprawled out in the slush behind me. A body on the ground slows my run to a jog. With snow underfoot, a quiet approach is impossible, but slowing down prevents me from missing details. Like the spent bullet casings covering the ground like pepper over mashed potatoes. They look homemade, the kind you'd expect to find in this era. I slow even more at the body, taking a moment to look at the fallen man's face. I wince at the two small bullet holes in his forehead. their dead center and just an inch apart, the spread of a marksman or woman. Farther on, I pass two more bodies and then a scattering of 9mm shell casings. There are enough of them that I'm positive Cassie ran out of ammunition, which is probably why I haven't heard shots in a while. Scanning the collection of tracks, I piece together the scene. The initial point of conflict is marked by a line of deep footprints facing off against two more sets, just 10 feet away. There's a lot of movement through the area as Cassie and Levi move to several fallback positions behind large trees. Then I find Cassie and Levi's path of retreat, which has been followed by more than a dozen men, all of them headed downhill, away from Synergy and the answers held within its walls. Shotgun in hand and ready to even the odds in favor of my friends, if they're still alive, I charge downhill. I make it only 10 steps before a branch slides out from behind a tree and between my legs. There's a stab of pain in my shin as I stumble. When I look back to face my attacker, I fail to notice the large fist approaching my face until it's too late. Ah, shit,